Welcome back to the Clean Sailors Podcast. Let's talk about sea, marine, sailing, and keeping it clean. I'm your host, Holly, founder of Clean Sailors, and a sailor myself with a passion for the health of our mighty oceans. Through conversations with experts, innovators, and activists, all working towards improving the health of our seas, we're showcasing the people and projects changing the way things are done. Today, I'm joined by Freya Terry, a 22-year-old female solo sailor making her way around the UK and Ireland. Aside from this exciting and lengthy journey of around 2,300 nautical miles, Freya is raising awareness of mental health as she goes. It's a foggy Sunday morning and we are snug in the cabin of her 31-foot boat, a beautiful Sparkman and Stevens She, doused bright pink. Freya, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
It's a real pleasure, not least because I appreciate you just joked about it, but given your age in particular, the fact that you're going off and doing this is just so incredible. I'm a lot older than you are, and I appreciate that. I'm not sure I've got the courage to do that just yet, in a way. So a real pleasure. Thank you. But tell me a little bit about yourself, Freya. Who are you?
That's something I'm definitely figuring out, and I'm learning as I go. I love sailing. I love being out on the water. I love having adventures. I love pushing myself and seeing what I can do and really living my life to the limit.
And where did you grow up? Where are you from originally?
I'm from Pembrokeshire. I grew up near Fishguard.
Beautiful. So Pembrokeshire, Wales, for those not in the UK. And how did you get into sailing and why sailing?
I got into sailing when I was about 11 or 12 with my best friend. We did one of the taster sessions and we really loved it. And then we went to join the yacht club and he took the last place for the season. So I couldn't start sailing until a year later. And he kept talking about it and how much he loved it. And I was really jealous. So I joined the next year and we started competing and I kept going until I could beat him. And we loved it. We kept going throughout our teenage years and started racing. I was doing loads of dinghy sailing. And then when I was old enough, I went through all my qualifications and became an instructor. And I don't know, I love it. I want it to be my life, really.
Very cool. I'm really pleased to hear it. And also, as you mentioned just prior to this, that you haven't family or anything into sailing. So it really was just you and your best friend going off trying something.
Completely. Nobody in my family has sailed. I've got four siblings. Nobody knew anything about it, really. We totally had to learn as we were going along. And it was always us pushing and our parents kind of following along reluctantly. But it's been amazing, really.
You say reluctant, but I'm sure they're pretty damn proud in terms of what you've already achieved, let alone what you're setting out to try and do.
They're very proud. My mum is terrified about this trip. She didn't want me to leave at all. But yeah, very proud.
Tell me about your journey with boats, because obviously you've got this really beautiful Sparkman Stevens She, but it's not your first boat. What's that journey been like so far?
So we bought my first boat with my best friend when we were 14, and that was an Elizabethan 21, and we loved sailing her, and we just started out in the bay little bits at a time. We'd mostly been sailing dinghies and we were just kind of figuring it out. We went through Ramsey Sound and then we discovered the tide very quickly. We just kind of learned as we went. We did our day skipper's course. I did some sail training with the Sea Cadets and then with the Tall Ships Trust and just any opportunity I could to get on water, really.
Very cool. And then your next boat was
She 27. I bought it from somebody's backyard. I paid £1 for it and we kind of dug it out of the garden.
It sounds like a bargain. I mean, they're one of the most beautiful boats, in my opinion, around.
They really are.
You paid £1 for it. But what state then was she in?
She was in an awful state. Somebody had drilled a hole through the boat to let all the water out. She had a mast. She didn't have any sails. She didn't have an engine. She didn't have any rigging. I had her for over a year. I brought her down to a boatyard near the water. I was working on her in my spare time. I did as much as I could. But it just got to the point where I was like, oh, I want to be sailing. And at the moment, I'm building a boat. And so I sold that boat and bought this one, which was for sale in Aberystwyth. And it was a local boat. It was a similar design. I sailed on the SNS 34 in Cork Week, and I loved that boat.
Very cool.
And they're lovely. They look beautiful, but they sail really well. And it was amazing. So this boat came up for sale in Aberystwyth and I went and had a look and I just kind of fell in love with her, really.
And painted her pink.
And I painted her bright pink because I'm an adult now and I can do whatever I want.
Exactly. She's your boat. But it seems, I'm just going back to your previous boat, the 27 footer. forgive me, counterintuitive somewhat that someone would drill a hole in the hull to let the water out.
Yeah, they weren't sailors that had the boat. It had been left in the house when they bought the house. It was just sat in the garden. It was covered in hedge. And they went, oh, it's full of water. Let me drill a hole to let the water out. It was very odd. But it was an easy repair, really. But
sure.
There were lots of little things that needed to be done and lots of big things that needed to be done. And I would have needed to pour a lot more money into it than I had.
Sure. I think that's a big thing, isn't it? Once having owned boats myself, is that it doesn't stop in some respects. So if you can start from a relatively done baseline, yeah, it does help. And it means, more importantly, as you're kind of alluding to, that you can get out on the water quicker, which I guess is your goal, right?
My goal was to be out there sailing. And I think this boat was amazing. She was beautiful, that she wasn't floating yet. If it's a boat that you can sail and then you can work on her as you go along, then that's what I wanted, really.
And you also ended up, obviously, with a boat that was larger.
So much larger, yeah. Much more comfortable. I think it's better for this trip, but also moving forwards, if I want to sail across the Atlantic or anything else, sure, she'll be capable of that. I'm amazed with her, really.
That's wonderful to hear. And I think it almost sounds a bit romantic and poetic, but it's actually indicative of bloody good engineering, is when you get something as aesthetically pleasing as some of the S&S boats, and obviously the Swans in particular as well, that just sail so beautifully as well. I mean, there's a perfect balance between visual aesthetics and design and performance, hey?
Absolutely. When I was sailing across to Padstow, I left the helm for 5 hours because the sails were perfectly balanced and I didn't need to steer the boat.
And no auto helm or anything?
No auto helm or anything. It just sailed beautifully.
Beautiful. And have you just got the head sail and the main sail, or have you got anything else set up?
I've got 4 different head sails to choose from. I've got 2 spinnakers and a main sail.
So. Super. We're meeting now in Falmouth in the southwest, so in Cornwall. You're already well into your passage, let's say. Obviously, a small portion of the UK and a lot further to go, but you've obviously made it round Land's End. How was that journey from Wales, Padstow, and also down to Falmouth?
It's been a right adventure, really. It's been calm in the last few days and I've been able to move. But coming across to Padstow, I lost my engine. I didn't lose my engine. I lost all engine power. I lost all my electrical power. And then coming into Padstow, I got knocked down and I hit my head. I didn't have any communication, really. No electrics, no charts. And then I set off my PLB and got rescued by the Coast Guard.
Wow.
Was crazy.
Freya, that's huge, considering that was your almost at the very beginning of your...
Day 2 of my voyage, really.
Wow.
Which was a little bit terrifying, but I was... safe, really. They came and picked me up. At least I had the PLB to call for help. They came and picked me up and did what they do, really.
There's that old saying, which it can be a bit of a cliche, but it really is true in life as it is on the water, but smooth seas never made a skilled sailor.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you probably weren't expecting that, hopefully ever on your passage, but certainly not within the first couple of days.
No, it was mad. I didn't really know how to react to it to start with. And I didn't want to set off any of my alarms. I was like, I'm only on day 2. I want to do it all myself. But I had to call for help at that point. It was dangerous. And then they came and picked me up. They brought me into Padstow. I spent a bit of time there. I looked after my boat. I looked after myself. And then I got going again and carried on.
That's remarkable. What was the cause, do you know, in terms of the loss of everything at the same time?
The loss of everything was problems with the engine, and it was to do with the fuel injector pump. So there was a lot of diesel in the oil system, which meant that the oil wasn't doing its job. And so the engine wasn't lubricated. It was overheating and then cutting out. And because I'd spent a long time trying to start the engine, that had run the engine battery down. And the other battery I had wasn't in good condition. So although it would charge up, it wouldn't hold any power. And I had solar panels on board. I'd been running the engine, but it just drained its power very, very quickly. So I was left without any power.
I think always interesting to ask sailors such as yourself in these kind of contexts, is what did you learn about yourself in that time? Because you don't expect it, right? Often life happens in that sense. So what did you see or observe about yourself in those kind of circumstances?
I learned that I could deal with it, which is amazing. A few years ago, I was struggling with everyday life, and now I'm out here dealing with the most extremes. And I had to go back to like paper and pencil chart work. I had to do all these things that you kind of learn about in the classroom, but putting them into practice and seeing that they do actually work was amazing.
It's remarkable. And we'll obviously talk about the rest of your story in a minute, but I think that's it. No one would wish a circumstance in which, hey, I want all the things that could possibly happen to happen at one time, ever. I mean, we all want comfort. We all want an element of stability and sort of security in that sense. All right, some adventure alongside it. But actually what we learn and how we develop as a result in some ways of going through those experiences, and to your point, is that unfortunately it's only in those moments that you realise you really can. You can manage. You've got it. You've obviously managed it because you're here and you're absolutely fine and you're still raring to go for the rest of the journey.
Completely.
What was perhaps your highest moment so far?
In a weird way, before I got knocked down, dealing with the lack of engine and dealing with the lack of electrical power, knowing that I could navigate by myself, I could stay up for hours on end and sail the boat, I could deal with all these things going wrong. I was doing it. I was out there and just doing what I wanted to do. I was out sailing. I was living my dream, really.
Very special. You had this engine issue. You lost the power. You recovered. You bossed it. You were all good to go. And then you got knocked down.
And then I got knocked down.
And how did that come about?
I don't really know. I was down below working on chart work. I felt the boat start to tip. I ran for the tiller and I flew across the boat and hit my head on the bulkhead. I don't really know what happened. I imagine it might have been a wave or a squall or something, but the boat stayed down for a little while and then it just brought itself up, right? Wow. Carried on as if nothing had happened.
Wow.
But I had a bit of concussion. I was quite sick and I'd hit my head. And at that point, I called for help.
That's huge, Rhea. That's really huge. Quite terrifying, actually. Did you feel scared in that instance? Or was it more a matter of...
No, it was just doing what I needed to do. I didn't have room for fear at that point. It was just... okay, this has happened. What do I do now? Try my radio. That doesn't work. Try my handheld. That doesn't work. Try my phone. That doesn't work. Okay, set off the PLB. Do each step. I knew what I needed to do. It was a case of doing it. And then it took an hour for the Coast Guard to get to me. I didn't know if they were coming. So I carried on sailing the boat and I knew that the tide was going to turn at midnight and then I'd be able to get into Padstow. And so it was just, what do I do next to survive?
That's a very fair point. Obviously, with the PLB, you won't get a response.
You don't. You don't know if anybody's heard you, if anybody's coming, if it's worked even. You don't know.
Wow. I mean, it really is. I'm sitting here feeling, as I did over the last couple of days of having chatted with you, relatively underachieving and also just in awe of you, because it really is, I think, yeah, certainly in your first couple of days of this passage in particular, but it's really something that I think all sailors would agree that none of us want to go through it. But obviously when you do, there are processes which we've all learned that you've just got to grip onto and follow through and keep going as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, you plan for these things and then when it happens, you know what to do.
I'm really sorry to hear that, obviously, the concussion that you got and everything else, it's kind of a big deal. Did you take a couple of days to recover from it? How was that process
in
itself?
I did. The lifeboat brought me in and they had an ambulance meet me and take me to hospital and they kept an eye on me for a few hours. But they said I wasn't allowed to go sailing for 2 weeks. Okay. So I stayed in harbour for a little while. And then I ended up spending almost a month in Padstow just getting everything fixed and checking everything over, waiting for engine parts, all sorts of things. But I spent a long time just recovering and getting ready to go.
Good idea. And Padstow, there are worse places to be than Padstow.
There are definitely worse
places. When you
places.
Said it, I spent, you know, almost all of my, I was about to say money, because I appreciate Padstow is pretty, but it's one of the wealthier parts of Cornwall, let's say. And then obviously you carried on your adventure around Newlyn.
Round to Newlyn. In the last couple of days, my engine's been working. I did some sea trials and then I got going and now I'm going for it. I stopped at St. Ives and then I made my way around to Newlyn. I stayed there for a night and then I set off for Falmouth, but I'm just getting some miles behind me now. I got to go around Land's End in calm seas. It was amazing.
That is very lucky in some ways, isn't it? But I feel like the universe gave you that back considering what you've been through the prior 2 weeks, eh? And then so you've got obviously the whole of the UK and Ireland that you're planning to do, and you're looking at making around 80 stops along the journey. How did you decide that even in itself? What is it about wanting to stop? What is the goal?
This voyage, I want to sail around the UK. I want to push my limits. I want to see what I can do, but it feels like an achievable goal. It's definitely a challenge, but it's something I think I can achieve. But I want to see all the places that I'm going. I want to explore and I want to talk to people. I'm doing it for mental health awareness. So as I'm going around, I'm stopping and doing talks. And in terms of the places I've stopped at, it's just looking at navigation, where it's feasible, depending on the wind and the tide, really.
Understand. Obviously, you've done a load of sailing and you started out, obviously, with your best friend. You had a boat together. Why was it important that you were doing this on your own? Why do this solo?
I think that's part of the challenge for me and it's part of the adventure. I think it'll push me to learn more I'm doing it alone, but every time I stop, I'm seeing people and I'm being sociable. But the sailing itself, I want to push myself in that way and learn as much as I can, really.
We're very fortunate around the UK in terms of the environment within which to learn, because we have it all in terms of
Everything.
weather, coastline, bathymetry. Obviously, we're renowned for the tides, which we've all come across for better or for worse. So in terms of a playground, a sort of nursery, it's a wonderful location for that. And the scenery, I mean, my goodness, the variety.
It's an adventure. It's going to be amazing. I think I want to explore the world now that I can.
I'm smiling because I know that you will, and I'm so insanely excited for you. Gosh, very, very cool. And we're here to talk about also your purpose. So tell us a little about that and why it's so important to you in particular.
Yeah, so I'm raising awareness for mental health issues with this trip, and I'm stopping along the way and talking to young people and just trying to spark a conversation around mental health. Because it's really important and it's something that's affected me for a long time. I started to get ill when I was only 11 or 12, and I struggled for years and didn't get the support that I needed. I couldn't reach out, I didn't talk about it. It's not something that we're taught in schools, it's not something that we learn to talk about. That's what I want to try and change. I want people to start talking about mental health. And for me, my story, it's about sharing that and showing people that it's okay. By sharing my story, hopefully other people can start to share their own and start to talk about mental health a bit more.
It's incredibly powerful, Freya. And I think it's also one of those experiences in some ways, the irony being that, as you've articulated, it can be very difficult to talk about it and to reach out, and yet we don't. It actually compounds it and in some ways makes it worse, obviously. So it's kind of a vicious circle in that respect.
Completely a vicious cycle. For me, I got worse and worse, and I didn't tell people, and they knew that things were wrong from my behaviors, but they didn't know how to help me. I would go to therapy, I'd sit in an office, and I wouldn't talk to anybody. I didn't know how to talk to anybody. But it got to the point where I attempted suicide, and I didn't tell anybody about it for months afterwards. And that's not okay. The fact that I was so scared as a child who'd been going through all this to ask for help. That's what we need to change. I think we need to start talking about it because young people are struggling and old people and anybody. It can affect anybody from any background. And that's what we need to start talking about.
That's incredibly powerful, Freya. And it's, again, just in some ways remarkable because explaining to a degree even what you've been through and what you found out about yourself and about the process of being in a situation or situations like that, that you have obviously got the courage and you've got the sort of confidence now to be trying to break the stigma around discussing it. Because not only for people who are suffering or not managing to cope with mental health, talking about it, but for everybody else around them, actually being able to recognize and understand and how best to approach it. Because I think we've experienced the stigma of mental health in terms of how do you ask somebody if they're okay? How do you ask someone if they're okay and actually get an honest answer? I mean, there's a myriad of difficulties in some ways of being the people who can be or have the potential to be the support network
Yeah.
as much as perhaps as being the individual who needs that support.
Absolutely. But I think everybody needs to start talking about it. Even when you're not struggling, talk about your mental health. And I think people need to realize that there are things we can do to help people. There are things that you can learn. There are ways to cope with things. There are therapies that work for you to reach out to. It's just finding the right thing for you and learning things that help during crisis. How do you manage that?
You've been very candid about sort of your journey, but also the length of your journey, because it wasn't something for you, listening to you describe it, that was short-lived or overnight. What do you remember as being some of the key milestones which helped you become more confident and capable of articulating exactly where you were and what you were feeling?
I think it's still something that I struggle with. I think it's really difficult to talk about mental health. I think to start with, going to group therapies really helped me because I could see other people in the same situation and having consistent support where people were turning up every week for years at a time, where I could learn to trust people again. I don't think there was any one point. I think I had a lot of really amazing support and it took me a while to accept that and to reach out for it when I needed to.
It may be obviously an ongoing process. I very much appreciate it. But is there a time in which you crystallized, or even an event, or even is it just part of the process whereby you've been going through these experiences, you're now talking about it, very publicly, even if it doesn't come naturally, or if it's not easy, or the capacity or the breadth of what you can articulate is still in some ways limited to your own personal boundaries. Where was that sort of moment where you felt, I'm not just going to go sailing and something I feel confident in, something I enjoy, but I'm going to do this for this other area of my life, which has obviously been quite present?
I think it's something that's been really present for me. And I was only discharged from mental health services about 2 weeks before I left for my voyage,
wow,
which is amazing. But I was planning this voyage. I was looking at funding it. I was looking at different charities and things. I was thinking about what's important to me. And at that point, I started sharing my story. Before that, my coaches, my friends, plenty of people that have heard me talk online have never, ever heard me talk about it in real life. They've seen me struggling, but I haven't talked to them. It was like a switch. I just went, I can use this for good. I'm going to do what I can. I'm going to share it online. It's a lot easier online because I'm not face to face with people, but I'm still sharing my story and it's still getting out there. And the response I've had has always been positive. It's been amazing.
Sure. I think because, as you mentioned, it's something that remains so unfortunately hidden for so many people. But you mentioned about sort of being, obviously doing it online is very different. By sailing around the country in Ireland, right?
Yeah.
You're not doing it online.
Not,
you're very
no.
much doing it in person. So that in itself is a...
It's a massive deal. The first talk I did was one of the support groups that I went to when I was younger, and they invited me back to talk to their young people. And it was terrifying. But I learned to do it and I kind of prepared for it. And I had people supporting me to do those first talks. And then it just became easier. And just step by step, I pushed myself and I learned that I could do it.
I think there's also something just occurs. I've got this almost picture in my mind, is that you have got this silent army of people behind you all over the world, really, for whom you are a channel about something that so many people are still not able to talk about or still not able to discuss. And for many people who are still perhaps lost in how they can support others, family, friends, colleagues, whatever else, who are going through something. So I can very much appreciate that sort of singularity of your experience and then coming out and having the confidence to stand in front of people and talk about it. But you're almost really beautifully doing it for so many people who haven't yet found their voice.
Absolutely. I think I've got the opportunity in it too now, and I've got the ability to. Things have aligned for me. I'm in a place where I can do this and I'm going to make the most of that, really.
You already really are. Just smiling with such appreciation because, as you mentioned, just even in the last month, having, as you sort of described, not only sort of being discharged, setting out on your journey, going through this whole engine failure kerfuffle, going through a massive knockdown and concussion. And then, I mean, in 4 weeks, it's crazy how much it happens.
It's crazy. And it's like, it's my first time living on my own, first time moving away from my friends and my support network. And it's surprised me and it surprised everybody that I've been able to deal with this.
What courage. It really is. You're incredibly remarkable. I'm not saying that it's easy. I appreciated recently when, you know, people, we can call each other like, you're really strong. But in some ways, it's not always a compliment because you have to appreciate what it takes to be strong and what it takes to have courage. And we don't learn any of those things normally by choice, I understand. So it's being able, as you said, to be incredibly vulnerable and just say, hey, this is what I've been through. This is what I'm still going through to a degree. And this is how I'm gonna help all of us deal with it very differently is really profound.
Yeah, I think I'm sharing my story and I'm sharing all of my story along with this voyage. I'm sharing the whole journey, not just the sailing.
On the sailing point of it, because I appreciate that those two journeys, as we're describing them, have happened almost concurrently, right? Your experience with your mental well-being and the processes that you've gone through in that sense have happened alongside, maybe quite separately, but maybe very together, your sailing kind of experiences, getting all your qualifications, buying your boats, getting out in the water, getting sort of bigger and bigger passages. How have the two sort of interacted? How has sailing perhaps helped or provided escapism or otherwise? What has it meant to you?
Sailing's been kind of freedom for me. It's been independence. It's given me something outside of my mental health, because when I was struggling, all people would see was me struggling and the behaviours I was showing and how difficult I was and how difficult it was for me. And sailing gave me something other than that. It gave me a personality outside of everything else. And it gave me something that I could be good at and that I learned to be good at. And I just loved the freedom of it.
Is it something that you believe, and part of the, maybe the part of the stigma around mental health, is that, do you feel to any degree that it can become one's identity And actually, we're forgetting, obviously, that any individual, all of us at some point will go through a mental health well-being episode, journey, process. It could be a couple of months, it could be years. There are life events that happen. There can be chemical, hormonal imbalances, the postnatal part, whatever. But very quickly, you can see that it can become seen as an identity that we're labeling individuals as having mental health issues, opportunities, and forgetting the rest of life.
It really can. And when you're going through it, that's so scary. And I think that's something we can change if we start talking about it and we start seeing people as whole people, not just the one side that they are showing you at that time. It's a really scary thing, but I think it's something we can change.
Sure. And I think to your point is that it's a part of all of us. It's a bit, you know, the highs or lows in life are concurrent with being human beings. I appreciate that they're expounded in certain sort of mental illnesses or mental problems or just mental well-being in general, but it is a part of life, not necessarily the only part of life.
Absolutely. Everybody has mental health. Not everybody is experiencing a mental health issue or a mental health illness, but everybody has mental health. Same as everybody has physical health.
Yeah.
We don't treat them the same, but we should.
Sure.
Everybody needs to look after their health and to help each other out when we can.
That's very pertinent, isn't it? It's a part of our being, in a sense. And the degree in which we're experiencing it differs between people, it differs between contexts, it differs between the time and processes that you're going through in your life, the same way as your physical health is too, right? For each of us, it's part of our identity in that sense, just by being human.
There's nothing wrong with you if you're struggling. It's that you're going through something. We don't treat it like we do. If a child is struggling with mental health, they're often seen as troubled or a troublemaker or causing issues or a problem. But if a child had a physical health issue where they had cancer, we treat it very, very differently. And why is that?
Very good point. Going on to the point of young people, and it's something that you and I touched on before we started this more formal conversation, but I was just talking about some of the statistics. And so 20% of adolescents may experience a mental health problem in any given year. So that's 20% of teenagers. That's a fifth of all of our teenagers experience a mental health problem in a given year. And then 50% of mental health problems are established by the age of 14. So already by the age of 14. 50% of mental health problems are already established, and then 75% by the age of 24. So it really goes to show that actually any underlying context or disposition or, say, mental health opportunities start in us in society really young.
Kids are dying from this. Adults are dying from this. It's something that we can treat. It's something that we can talk about, and it's something that we can change. And if we act early, that's where we can have an effect. Because all of this stuff happening when you're so young, the effect that has on you throughout your life, not just when you're young.
And relationships with each other, your sort of sense of self-confidence, your accomplishments, I mean, it is impacting our sense of self and our belief in self and our experience of our own self impacts everything, doesn't it?
Everything. And also, that's not just that one person that's struggling. It's their whole family. It's their whole support system that's going to be affected by that struggle. So it's not just the 20% of people, it's everybody that's affected by somebody that's had a mental health issue.
Which really, even if you look at it from a statistical point of view, if you've got 50% of mental health problems established by 14, 75% of age 24, you've got 20% of adolescents with mental health problems in any given year, those ripples, as you're saying, about all of our sort of degrees of separation is a vast majority of society, arguably, that's affected by this, even if the initial kind of mental health well-being issues and opportunities belong to the 20%. It's affecting all of us, obviously.
Yeah, it's affecting all of us. And we can change that. We can do something about this. We can make it easier for people to reach out for help. We can teach people in schools. We can teach people how you deal with something like this. How do you deal with a crisis? How do you deal with an everyday problem? There are answers to these things. We know how to talk about it, but we're still not talking about it.
Why do you think that is? And what, in your experience, where's the bridge that comes from our knowledge and understanding of the opportunities and actually doing them?
I think it's a very scary thing to talk about. But statistics say that talking about suicide and talking about mental health doesn't ever make it worse. It can only make it better. Talking about things out in the open can make things better. But it's a very, very scary thing to do because there is such a stigma out there. And the only way we can change that is by talking about mental health.
If you had one thing for anybody listening to this episode, if you wanted them to know one thing or do one thing around mental health themselves or others, what would it be?
Hold on, wait a little bit. Things will get a bit better. Even if they're not right now, even if they're not most of the time, you'll have moments when things are better. And if you work hard and if you try and if you reach out for help, there is support available. You can get better, even if it takes years and years. And struggling isn't on you, but it is your responsibility to do something about it, to reach out for help, to get support. I think for anybody else that's not struggling at the moment, talk about your mental health. Even if you don't need to, somebody else around you needs to hear it.
That's really, really interesting, isn't it? So even if you're not struggling, talk about how you are. I'm feeling great today. Actually, I'm not feeling so great today. Even if it isn't obviously the gravity of a mental health issue or opportunity, just discussing how we're doing more openly.
And how we're dealing with things that are hard. Because we can learn to deal with things. That's something that we can learn, but we don't talk about it.
I was listening to something yesterday on a similar-ish topic, and they said even as, particularly as, say, parents, whether it's colleagues or perhaps people who have more experience in life, let's say, celebrating wins, which we often do, and hey, so-and-so is achieving, great job, like wonderful, which we ought to do, but also being so much more candid about when we're not, because I think it flows through society, and I'm also calling myself out here, where if you're not having a great time, we do shut off, and we do think, you know, part of it can be, all right, I want to be in a context where I don't have to think about it, or I don't have to be that person, or I don't want to feel those feelings. You know, you can flip into work mode, you can flip into sort of friends mode, you can flip into your hobbies. But like you said, sailing gave you an opportunity in some ways of freedom away from it. But at the same time, being able to say, actually, I'm having a really bad day today, or I'm feeling so insecure, uncomfortable, unhappy, and separating in some ways that from being I am. So rather than saying I am unhappy, I'm feeling unhappy, because there's an element of it not being permanent. And I think to your point around identity, even when we say I'm unhappy, I'm not doing great, it's solidifying something, isn't it? It's very different from I'm feeling this,
I'm experiencing this. It's not on you that this is happening. It's something that you're going through and that something that you can get through.
But I do want to finish on the sailing, because this is what you are known for and how you're cementing yourself and how you're achieving. And this is an incredible adventure. Is there anywhere in particular on this passage that you're looking forward to really seeing? Is there anywhere around the UK that you just think, my gosh, I've always wanted to go there?
I want to sail up on the west coast of Scotland. I sailed there before, but it's one of my favourite places. This is a real adventure. I'm pushing myself. I don't know how I'll get on, but I'm going to give it a go and I'm going to try and I'll get as far as I can.
That's wonderful. And it's about 2,300 nautical miles, you mentioned.
Roughly, yeah.
Okay. And I know that we should pause and enjoy, you know, the current adventure or otherwise, but there is obviously a driving force within you to do bigger things. And you have mentioned the Atlantic. This is the beginning for you. I mean, it is almost limitless.
I think this is the beginning. I don't know how far I'll get. I want to try everything and see what I love. And then that's what I'm going to pursue. I think for me, the most important thing is finding what I enjoy. And at the moment, that is solo sailing. Mm. So I'm going to push myself as far as I can go.
I'm going to make you a promise, and I want you to make me one too, that when you do obviously complete this, we'll catch up. But when you cross the Atlantic, I'll be on the other side waiting to record the next episode with you about your next achievement, because I can see it now. That beautiful pink delta, SNSG, crossing those waters amongst many waters around our globe in the future. I'm really, really excited. And as I said, I'm so in awe of you, Freya, and what you're about and what you're about to achieve, and at least just attempting, let alone achieving. So I really appreciate your time and the message that you're sharing.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been amazing. I can't wait to see how far I get and how far I go and how far I can share my story and how I can spark conversation, really, and just try things. It's an adventure, it's a challenge, it's a journey.
There are going to be some high bits and there are going to be some not so high bits, as you've already experienced so far. For people to find out more about you, tell us your website, tell us your Instagram handles, and tell us about where they can make donations to your cause.
So my website is www.she-sails.co.uk. My Instagram is freya.rose.sailing. I'm on Facebook as She Sails.
Very clever, because she sails is obviously female sailing.
It's female
and
sailing.
And she is in your boat
and
too.
And my boat is a she.
SMS she. Very, very clever. And your GoFundMe, how can people support your cause?
It's Sailing for Mental Health. It's on GoFundMe. Just have a Google, you'll find it. It's the bright pink boat. You won't miss it.
You won't miss it. Well, she's sharing pictures, obviously, of Freya and her boat, but of all of the links too that Freya's mentioned, so that we can support her journey and keep up to date with her adventures. Freya Terry, female solo sailor, about to make her way even further around the UK and Ireland. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Clean Sailors podcast. All relevant links to the projects and people we talk to can be found with the podcast link. For all episodes or to get in touch, just visit cleansailors.com. We love to hear from you. We believe that great ideas should be shared, which is why our podcast is free to appear on. So if you've got a project, idea, or topic you think we should be discussing, get in touch. In the meantime, thank you for listening and see you for the next episode.